and we're off.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, have you tried LA Talk Radio for your fix on talk radio? Hey, I'm J. Michael Weicker here, and if you're like me, you love talk radio. And if you're like me, you just can't find the right stations for your habit on the AM dial. Well, how about you tune in to LA Talk Radio? See, LA Talk Radio is a .com and has it all. And right now we have the beginner's writer's very favorite show, The Writer's Block. So sit back, put your feet up, and enjoy, because it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Absolutely nothing like a little Henry Mancini to start off an evening, is there?
One of my favorites.
Oh, my God, Peter Gunn, I love it. I love it, I love it. Hey, this is Jim Christina. I'm your host of The Writer's Block, and now we're on LA Talk Radio. And I am here in the studio with Bob Brill.
Hello.
And, of course, Bobby Jean Bell is our roving correspondent out there in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hello. I love that piece of music.
Well, okay. Then we're going to listen to just a little bit more of it. Here you go.
I love the horn. Takes me back to my elementary school days when I actually played the trumpet.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, not play with, but you actually played
it?
No,
I actually played the trumpet.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
I was, then I figured, my teacher figured out that I was just memorizing everything, and I had to quit.
Well, you know, I mean, Bob and I were sitting here chair dancing, Bobby Jean.
Is it? Can I see that on Facebook Live yet?
Maybe.
I hope so. I wasn't playing the air trumpet for nothing.
Anyway, as I mentioned last week, Bob Brill had won the Chaplin Award for the best short picture.
Thank you. His
short Sundown. So congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I understand. And Russ, if you're listening, there was no money involved. In fact, Bob says they're so cheap, he had to buy his own trophy.
Well, you know, a win is a win. A trophy's a trophy.
That's right. You know, if people say, well, they only won by 1 point. No.
No, they won.
It's a win.
any recognition you get. And that was so cool. And then we got accepted to the Wild Bunch Film Festival. It's in Wilcox, Arizona, which is where I was last weekend.
Yeah.
And we screened there and got a chance to do some nice Q&A. So that was kind of fun, too. And that was great.
Q&A.
Yeah, it's been good. It's been good.
Q&A.
Yeah.
Okay.
What'd I say?
You said Q and I just immediately went to the other word.
Oh, okay.
Because
Q and A.
Question and answers. Okay. Also, last week I mentioned a little hamburger joint in Simi Valley that is kind of becoming nationwide.
Yeah.
And we was just absolutely thrilled with this place. We went and had a burger. It was just like dynamite. So I mentioned them last week, and I have to mention them again tonight because we were there again last night, and the food is so good.
What is
everything
it?
Is fresh. I'll tell you in a second. Everything is fresh.
My mouth is watering.
They virtually take the hamburger. It's done every morning. First thing, they roll it into a ball, so they ball their burgers. I'm sorry, but that's
I'm on their wall. I'm sorry.
We ball our burgers. Then they smash them and they cook them while you wait. And they're fries, same thing. Everything is fresh, comes out. You get it, and it's like hot, fresh. It's not like Burger King or McDonald's, you know.
Not flash frozen.
You're lucky if you get a warm burger, but it's hot.
Yeah.
The place is called Smash Burger. They're on 1st and LA Avenue in Simi, right across from the Shell station.
Yeah, I know exactly where that's at.
Restaurant. Yeah. The place is phenomenal. The burgers are great. The
place on the corner there?
Right there in the corner. Their burgers are phenomenal. Their fries are great. I haven't tried any of the other stuff, but I got to tell you, their food is really good.
Manana. I'll be there manana.
So stop by, tell them the Writer's Block sent you, and they'll be thrilled because The manager came by and stopped by and talked to us the other
day.
Ain't nothing like a good burger. Don't you have them in Albuquerque, Bobby Jean?
I think that we do. We've not been to one yet.
Right?
But I actually do think that we do. But, you know, besides a good burger, I got to say, you know, chocolate and wine run a pretty good second and third place.
Well, for some people, that would be first and second place.
Well, for Bobby, it's the third glass right now.
Well, you know, Bobby goes chocolate, wine, 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 chocolate, wine, wine, wine. And by the time you get to the seventh wine, Bobby is snoring.
Yeah, it's true. Show's over.
Show's done. Bring out the Baileys. Okay. Let's get on with our guest tonight because I'm sure he's sitting there chomping at his bit because it's really late where he is. No, actually, it's not. It's only 8 o'clock, so we're good.
It's one of those hours.
We're good. Okay, Coffin Hawk Press is a small press located in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Originally an offshoot of the Coffin Hawk online event for indie horror authors, Coffin Hawk Press has published several anthologies, including the Arthur Ellis Award-nominated AB Negative, the Weird Western Collection, Tall Tales of the Weird West, and 2017's It's a Weird Winter Wonderland. CHP has also, that would be Coffin Hawk Press, excuse me, has also recently begun to publish single author collections, Fishing with the Devil by Robert Bowes, novels Infractus by Sarah L. Johnson, and has launched a new series of dark crime novels and novellas, including Con Morte by Alex Howerton, Manchester Vice by UK author Jack Strange, and the upcoming titles Murdering Mr. Edwards. My sixth grade teacher was Mr. Edwards. Why would you got him murder? Well, I can understand why they wouldn't want to murder him. Anyway, Rocket Rider and Little Putt Putt Go Down Swinging. Well, so, and we have, of course, with us tonight is Mr. Alex Howerton. He's the co-owner and writer of Con Morte, which freely translated in the Italian is With Death. In case nobody knew that but me and Bob. And now Alex. Excellent. Okay, without further ado, would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Axel Howerton. Okay, Axel, you're on.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Oh, you know, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. Now, this is, Con Morte is your first full-length novel, is that correct?
Not publishing, but writing. Sorry, cutting out there. Hold on a second.
That's the problem with cell phones.
Yeah, especially those in Canada.
Yeah, Canadian cell phone.
Yeah. I wore this, you know, just for
Oh, he did.
Tonight.
He wore a Canada t-shirt just for you.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
There we go.
See if that works better.
Okay, it does, actually.
Okay. My first novel actually came out in 2013.
Okay.
And that was kind of a hard-boiled detective caper called Hot Sinatra, which was also nominated for the Arthur Ellis Award for Best First Novel.
Oh, cool.
Arthur Ellis Award being Crime Writers of Canada awards.
Okay.
Kind of a equivalent to the Hammett, I think.
Okay, cool. So this is not your very first standalone novel. This is like your many of
these. Con Morte is my third novel.
Aha.
So this being a mafia type novel and it follows up on a Sinatra novel, is there some sort of link there? No.
Probably. I have a few obsessions that seem to repeat themselves throughout my work. I started out in horror, and so there's usually some of that kind of leaks in, and I love crime. I'm a huge Elmore Leonard fan, crime and the westerns, and the older hard-boiled stuff, the Black Mask guys, Hammett, Chandler, Jim Thompson. Jim Thompson was kind of a big influence on Con Morte. Like everybody, I love a good mafia story. I love a good showdown.
Which brings me to my first question that I really, really wanted to ask you. And that is the fact that, you know, most of us get our feelings of what the mafia is like or what that world is like from movies, from books, because none of us has really been there and it's really a secret society. Yet at the same time, everything kind of becomes the same because of that, you know, that we kind of gather what we know about the mafia from, you know, whether it's Godfather or whether it's Casino or Goodfellas or any of the lower class mafia movies. Where did your knowledge of this come from, and how did you kind of develop that?
Well, as you say, like anyone, I was mostly informed by that kind of pop culture reference to the mafia, but I've been I've had a long time fixation, probably a lifetime fixation on it. So not only have I seen all those movies, but I collect the books, and anytime there's things coming up, Whitey Bulger news, things like that, I'm kind of drawn right to it. So I just soak that stuff in. But at the same time,
We're just talking about Whitey Bulger being dead now.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Oh, go ahead.
In any case, in preparing for this book, I actually did do a lot of research, not only on, those traditional forms of mafia that everybody knows of, the New York mafia and the Boston mafia and that kind of thing, the Italian-based mafias. But I also did a lot of research on those groups and organized crime in Canada and different organized crime groups from different parts of the world and how they're all kind of intermingling these days and the history of those. And what I tried to do was steer it a little bit away from the traditional, Sicilian mafia Godfather style thing by focusing on a specific different group from Tuscany.
Right.
And using that more, and then having them, it mentions a lot of dealings with other gangs, with, Aboriginal gangs, which we have a lot of in Canada. There's a lot of other ethnic-based crime groups in Canada. And again, that's something that's popped up a bunch of times in my work. In Hot Sinatra, there was some mob guys that were more traditional mob guys from Vegas. In my newest book that I'm just finishing up, which is a sequel to my second novel, and it's more of a more in the horror vein. It's kind of an urban fantasy horror. Even though it's urban fantasy horror, still somehow I'm working in Bulgarian mafia and things like that. It always just seems to crop up.
Well, I mean, it's a great subject to write
about. But I do a lot of research.
Well, you have to.
Well, one of the big things we're seeing now, too, especially here in Southern California, is, of course, Armenian mafia. Is that also a big thing in Canada?
There have been groups of specifically Armenian and a lot of other kind of Eastern European groups have really cropped up. In addition to, there's a lot of Asian gangs. Especially on the West Coast, which I'm sure is probably is the same in the States. Like in Vancouver, there's a lot of activity with the Asian gangs that kind of come in from Hong Kong and, China, Japan,
Vietnam.
But I didn't want to get too much into, the standard tropes with, sure, triad versus, Sicilian mafia versus Slav guys in tracksuits kind of thing. I wanted to be a little...
But you did have one, Mikey.
I did.
Why are they always wearing tracksuits? I can never figure that out.
Because they can't get clothes.
Oh, there we go.
Run.
It's dress casual.
Exactly.
I guess.
Exactly. Well, your protagonist in this book is a bad guy. He's not a real pleasant person to be around. He's psychotic. The guy is half nuts. He's taking pills to keep kind of straight, and he's a murderer. He's a killer. I suppose calling a spade is the right thing to do here. And he's a killer for the head man of the... Well, it's not the Sicilian mafia, the Italian arm.
Yeah, it's Tuscan originated.
Right, but I mean, the guy is just as bad. He's, you know, slick back hair.
Gang's a gang.
The
right?
gangster.
Yeah.
They're gangsters.
Well, I mean, you can't really. That was part of the point of exploring that is, you know, you can't really have a good guy be a hitman, you know.
Well, but you did.
You're murdering people for a living.
I mean,
there's been likable ones.
He was kind of a good. He was kind of a good guy. He was kind of,
And he does turn out to. I think he redeems himself.
He does redeem himself. Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
But the point to me, I wanted to do something. I wanted to explore kind of what the psychological ramifications of having a job like that would be on somebody, mm-hmm. as well as what kind of psychology would be required for somebody to fall into that line of work so easily and not have it be an issue. I watched a lot of documentaries where they were interviewing these mafia hitmen like the Iceman, and listening to these guys talk about, you know, it's not necessarily that they had abusive childhoods and the things that you usually hear about serial killers, but they always seem to be a little off, and they were, you know, sociopathic, and they had these tendencies to not really connect with people and not really understand life and the value of life. And that made them much more susceptible to being picked up by those groups and groomed into those positions.
Sure.
And that was something that was really interesting to me. So I kind of wanted to explore that. And then in doing that, you know, it's written in first person, and it kind of, was a little hard because I would kind of inhabit that character. And then it was hard to get out of that mental state after the fact. I'd have to
I did wonder.
I'd have to take a couple hours between writing for, if I was writing for 8 or 10 hours, I'd have to go, you know, separate myself for a couple hours just to kind of decompress before I could be around people.
Sure.
You know, I couldn't just stop writing and go tuck my kids in.
Sure. Well, and writing in a noir style, it's difficult to write that anyway, especially now since that we're so far out of the noir, mm-hmm. that going back and writing in that style of story, in that style of book, I think probably is a lot of work and a lot more than just sitting down and penning a story. So
I guess one of the
that's an interesting point, because myself, I'm a huge fan and a huge proponent of noir, but so many people don't really understand what noir
is. Or know what it is.
Or what
should
be.
Right.
And it gets confused so much with hard-boiled.
Right.
And, you know, I teach classes on this. I've written essays and columns on this about the difference between hard-boiled and noir. You know, noir doesn't mean guys in hats and,
exactly.
and dames with gams and all that stuff. It's a psychological edge to the to the story that is dark and nihilist and depressing. And it came from these guys that were coming back from the war after World War I and after World War II, and they were so psychologically scarred that they couldn't write a happy ending.
Right. Absolutely.
And this kind of book just really lent itself perfectly to that idea. And I really wanted to do something like that was completely separated from hard-boiled.
Right.
So it wasn't about a detective, and it wasn't about femme fatale. It was something completely different, but I still wanted to make it just really that really dark, gritty noir. And as I said, Jim Thompson was a big influence on me as I was preparing to write this. And that's what I find a lot with Jim Thompson books is he doesn't write those detective stories, and he doesn't write, you know, the standard what people confuses noir. He writes these stories about these guys that just kind of get mixed up, these guys that are already psychologically damaged, and they just don't care about anybody else, or, you know, they're complete psychopaths.
Sure.
And they just kind of roll along like a steamroller and just destroy everything and everybody and just drag everyone down with them.
Sure.
And it's just fascinating to watch that spiral. And that's what I wanted to do with this book. But then at the end, I have to admit my natural proclivity
for
the main character kind of made me want to make him not such a monster in the end.
You gave him an out.
Well, you know, one of the things that every time we see movies about the mafia or mafia types, at the beginning, we kind of get sucked in, and the bad guys are good guys. We kind of can I could do that. I could be that. We kind of get in there, whether it's The Godfather, Goodfellas, or whatever. You kind of get in there. But there's always at some point where it turns out to be, oh, my gosh, what a terrible life that is in the end. How did you handle that?
I tried to just avoid that altogether. I wanted to kind of go the opposite of that stereotype. You know, I've written that stuff before where the gangsters are flashy and charming and you know, you like those characters until you see the awful things they do. I had a guy, a character named Joey Thumbs in Hot Sinatra that, you know, comes across as this flashy, charming ladies' man, and then it turns out that he's just a complete monster. But I wanted to kind of avoid that, and I wanted to go straight to this guy that's just completely separated from the world, and he's just doing his job, and he's just kind of going through the motions, but he has this weird outlook on things. And he doesn't understand that he's so much different, and he doesn't really understand how he's being manipulated at first. And I really wanted to just kind of jump right into him being him in his world, and you're just kind of thrust into that and figure it out as you go along.
Well, the book is fascinating, and it's again, it's titled Con Morte. And it's almost on the cusp of a novella. It's just, I think, realistically, it's kind of like right there in between. It could be a novel, a complete novel, or almost a novella, and you know, waiting to the other half to come out. So I yeah. You know, but the story was fascinating to me. Go ahead.
Originally, it was intended as a novella. When I wrote this one, I finished my second novel, which is called Fur, and it's kind of a noirish. It's like a noir meets urban fantasy werewolf story. And with Coffin Hop Press, which I run with a gentleman named Rob Bowes, we decided we wanted to start a line of dark crime and noir novellas, which we call noirvellas. And we needed to have a book to kind of launch it before we could really sell it to other writers and try and get people to send in submissions so that we could, you know, start working on this line. So I said, well, I had this idea that I'd been floating around for a while, and I wanted to, after doing this urban fantasy thing, I wanted to kind of get back into some crime stuff, and I wanted to just do something really dark and you know, Jim Thompson-esque. And so I said, yeah, well, I'll write the first one. And as it always goes, you know, it was planned as a novella, and then it turned out to be a dozen thousand words too long for a novella.
Yeah.
So we still put it out initially as part of the noirvella line. It was the first book in the noirvella line. But we've since, because it's not a novella length, just kind of taken that branding off of it now that we have other books in that line.
Sure.
And to be honest, other books in that line aren't necessarily dark crime or noir either. But so it was originally meant to be a novella, and it just kind of came out longer than that to really service the story properly. But I'm not sure how I would manage a sequel.
Yeah, I could well imagine.
That was part of it, too. Honestly, I wanted to write a book that there just could not be any damn way that I would have a sequel, because every book I've written, after it comes out, the only thing people ask is when's the next one coming out?
Yeah, yeah,
and I just kind of rail against that because, you know, the first book, I had this touching ending at the end, and I wanted it to just, that's the end of the story and on to the next thing. And the publisher wanted another one, and everybody that's read it wants to know when the next one is. And so eventually I planned out a couple more, and then same thing with Fur. Everybody wanted to know, well, what's the next part of the story? When's the next one come out? So that one I kind of softened a little bit, and the publisher had me write an epilogue that puts two of the secondary characters together. And then I've just finished writing a sequel to that that has just those two characters. And they like that so much that now it's tentatively going to be a whole series. So it seems like it never ends. So this one, I was consciously like, no, I'm just going to like scorched earth, and there's no way there can be a sequel. But never say never, right?
Exactly.
There's always a way to.
Well, James Bond learned that.
There's always a way to bring Jason back for the 25th movie.
It could always be a dream, right?
There you go. There you go.
Exactly.
Okay, well, the book is Con Morte, and we're going to take a real quick break. We're not going to give away anything on the book. I'll just give you a real warning to everybody who wants to read it. It is bloody, and it's not exactly reading for a six-year-old or sixth grader. So
it is not.
So take that for what it is. The book, again, is Con Morte. It's written by Axel Howerton. We'll be back with Axel in just a few minutes. And right now we're going to do some selling and hope somebody does some buying. So hang tough and we'll be back with you. You've typed your final period. You've stacked your last chapter. You sat back in your chair and you said to yourself, whew, I'm done. Well, nope, not even close. Sure, you finished your manuscript, but it takes a whole lot more to have a completed book. And you know what it takes? It takes editing, and it takes rewriting, and then more editing, and more rewriting, and formatting, proofreading, and more rewriting, and more editing. So then if you're real lucky, you can get together and devise a cover and maybe get some proofs printed and take a look and maybe get some books printed and put them on your dining room table or your coffee table, because for most of them are going to stay. Well, why not let the folks at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books do that for you? For a very small investment, we can do all of the above and get you the finished printed book you dreamt about when you first started typing and help you get some of those dollars in your pockets. We're here for new writers that don't have the foggiest idea of what they're doing. So having learned it, we can share and help you get a book of which you can be proud. So give us a call, 805-795-3165, or email me, jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com, or R. Paolinelli, Paolinelli, at TuscanyBayBooks.com. Just send us a manuscript and give us a heads up and let us tell you if we think your manuscript's worth working with, and we'll let you know for sure because we won't lie. So 805-795-3165. Bobby Jean, I believe you have something you want to say.
I do. Author F. Scott Fitzgerald states, life starts all over again when it gets crisp in the fall. And Out West agrees. Time to rework your wardrobe and refresh your attitude. Add a leather or suede jacket, pull on a new pair of stylish boots, slip on a jaunty sweater or wrap. A dash of cinnamon, a splash of cobalt blue, a warm red, and a swing of fringe. Out West Shop has just what you need to spice up your life with a touch of the West. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com for the best of fine goods inspired by the West, and we do ship all over the world. Enter coupon code WB9, that's for Writer's Block September, even though we're in October, and receive $10 off your order. Call toll-free 1-877-340-9378. It's always a great day out West.
And you do that so well, it makes me want to get on your website and buy like one of my books. Okay, here we go. You're leaving on vacation. Your tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed and mail delivery has been suspended. But what about the dog? All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside among orange trees and grass in a country setting. Your dog will get to be, well, your dog gets to be a dog. All Dogs Rule offers additional services, including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and training. So visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. When your pup returns home, that smile on his face will leave you wondering, whose vacation was better? The dog's. As Bob just said, I think you had your dog there, didn't you, Bob? So all dogs rule, Fillmore, California. I'm sorry? Yeah, it is. Fun place. Okay, it is now 7:30. We are on the air tonight with Axel Howerton, who is a publisher and a writer and wrote a fascinating book called Con Morte. If you want to call and talk to Axel tonight, our number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. Okay, Axel, back with you. I'm going to assume that you are still with us.
I am still
okay,
here.
Okay, then. Let's. Where did this idea for this? I mean, you know, obviously you've written about mobsters and stuff before. What made you get into that genre? Where it's because our new writers that listen, I'm sure some of them sit around and wonder, well, I'd like to write a book. I'd like to write a story. How do I pick a subject? Because it isn't always something you know about. As you said, you had a lot of research you had to do. So, what advice can you give our listeners as to what story or what idea to pick or genre to pick to write about?
Well, I mean, to me, it's common sense to, you know, write what you love, what you have a passion for, what you like to read.
Sure.
To be honest, I've had people tell me, oh, you should write a kid's book, or oh, you should write this, or people say that the romance, not in this book, but in some of my other books, that the romance subplots are well done, so I should maybe try a romance. But, even thinking about trying to write those things and trying to read those other genres, to me, that I'm not terribly interested in, just kind of falls flat for me. I've always been a big reader of crime and you know, as I said before, of horror, the two main things that I write in Westerns. And I tend to be kind of a pastiche writer where I'll take a bunch of things and kind of slap them together. And I'm always kind of mashing genres together. But the gangster stuff, the mafia stuff and the crime stuff, generally, I think just comes from the stuff that I love to read. Mm-hmm. I was always a big fan of the stuff that would be in Alfred Hitchcock magazine or Ellery Queen. And through that, I got into the older stuff, the Black Mask stuff and the pulp writers of the 30s and the 40s. And I'm really kind of obsessive about things. So when I get into those things, I tend to collect a huge, vast library of them and just read that stuff obsessively for a while, and get to know everything that I can.
You know, actually,
and I think just kind of soaking those things in, eventually that becomes the thing that you're most familiar with, the thing you're most comfortable with. And then that translates into what you feel confident in trying to put out your own story with.
Mm-hmm. You know, Axel, that being said, I'm kind of curious how you handle the dual role as author and publisher.
Sorry?
That being said, I'm kind of curious how you handle the dual role of author as well as publisher.
Well, with this particular book, I took a step back in the publishing aspect. I didn't write it and then edit it myself and say, oh yeah, this is perfect, this is great, it's ready to print. I let my partner make sure that it was up to what he thought would be good enough to publish. We had editors on it that worked on it with me to do rewrites. And with other stuff, I mean, as a publisher, we're still kind of a niche publisher because we do specifically do those same things that I write. Our motto basically is new pulp, new crime, new weird. And or new crime, new weird, new pulp, because we do dark crime and we do weird fiction. We have these two separate lines of kind of weird stuff like Tall Tales of the Weird West, and we have a weird Christmas anthology, and we have you know, some more kind of horror-leaning, bizarro, cosmic kind of stuff. And then we have the crime stuff, which is all darker crime. And both of those things are things that I love and I know a lot about. So I feel that my tastes are a little more refined with those than they would be with genres I'm not as familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
So when we get stuff in, I know I have things to compare it to, and I can judge it a little better by quality, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to that stuff, as a publisher, you know, it's still flavored by my own tastes, and because there's only two of us running the show, you know, it really comes down to what we personally like, as opposed to, you know, what we think is marketable or what we're going to make $1 million on. We're not going to make $1 million on anything. We're just a rinky-dink little independent publisher.
But, right.
Most of the time, we want to put out stuff that we like and we would want to read and that we feel passionate about and we want to put out there for the rest of the world,
mm-hmm.
because we think it's deserving of the attention.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Bobby,
did that answer the question?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Bobby, I know you're chomping at the bit to ask the question of the evening, so have at it.
I have a couple questions.
Go for it.
I know that you have written quite a bit of short stories, and I wondered if you might just talk about the short story and what attracts you to writing that length of a story.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I haven't written a lot of short stuff in a long time, and I'm kind of missing it right now. But again, common sense kind of dictated that was where to start. You don't, you know, I wasn't about to start by writing a novel and say, okay, I know what I'm doing well enough to write a whole novel. I started writing, you know, like most writers will say, I've been writing since I could pick up a crayon. But I had things published, even when I was in elementary school, I had stuff published, essays and things. And, you know, I was writing little books of funny poetry with my friends and stuff. And in my teens, I had a couple of stories published and into my 20s. And then I just kind of, you know, I got busy and I got carried away and I left that behind and wasn't really worrying about that. I was an entertainment journalist for like 10 years doing movie reviews and interviews and stuff like that. And eventually I found talking to these people that were creating stuff all the time. And I was just talking about other people creating stuff. And I felt this kind of emptiness that I wanted to get back to creating things. So I started back trying to write fiction again, and I kind of had to, you know, get back on the bike and reteach myself how to ride it. And short stories always seemed like the best way to do that because you can practice a lot of different things in a shorter time span and, you know, practice that thing and then see how it works. So if I wanted to work on ramping up tension, I can work on that in one story and make a tense story and see how I do with that. And it's not 60 or 100,000 words. It's, you know, 10,000 words. And that's kind of easier to get a handle on. And then once I'm done that, if I want to try and work on doing something funny and working on using humor, I can do that in a completely different piece and it's still not taking me 5 years and 100,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to kind of play to my own attention deficit problems by I could write a crime story and then I could write a horror story. I could write a, you know, again, I'm kind of obsessive about these things. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to write a vampire story or a werewolf story. I'm going to write a zombie story. I'm going to write a, you know, if I'm going to write a monster story, which one am I going to pick? I don't have to pick one. I can write one of everything.
Do you sometimes
write Westerns?
No.
Sorry?
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No,
go ahead.
I was just going to say more of the same.
Yeah. Well, I read something about that you enjoy writing a short story maybe based on a side character from a larger work where you can kind of explores an additional a character that didn't necessarily have a major role in a larger book. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting. It allows you to kind of investigate somebody that had a small role in a bigger work.
Yeah, for sure. This book, not so much, because I paid a lot of attention to the ancillary characters, and I always try to make sure that all of the characters are really fleshed out. And I'll go back through, whether it's a short story or a novel, and I'll go back through and try and look at it from each character's perspective to make sure that it feels true to that character, and it feels like this is how that character would see events or how they would act, to make sure that everybody kind of feels organic and everything is working the way that it really would. And in this, in Con Morte, I didn't really have a lot of side characters and a lot of featured side characters, but a lot of my other work, there's these kind of quirky side characters that readers really tend to like, and I really love. And then I just kind of feel like I want to play with those characters more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm a huge Elmore Leonard fan, and he was kind of, you know, really well known for bringing back these characters time after time after time. I think it was The Switch, and he had these two bumbling criminals, and then he brings them back again in Rum Punch. And the books are like 20 years apart in the story and in reality, and revisiting those characters again. And there's a couple of little short stories where he pops them in there once in a while. And it just, that always appealed to me. Or Stephen King does that a lot, where there's these little characters and you remember somebody from something else, and you're like, oh, I remember that guy from this book. And so, like in Hot Sinatra, there's a pair of hired thugs. The mafia guys come from Las Vegas, and they want to work over the detective, but they're not allowed, under organized crime rules, they're not allowed to bring their own muscle from Vegas. They have to hire local guys. It's like a union thing. So they hire these
pay
two
your
thugs.
Dues.
They hire these two thugs who turn out to be not really great hired thugs, but they also turn out to be underground sex performers and a gay couple. And so there's a lot of humor with those characters and the way that those two characters play off of each other, because they're like a bickering married couple when they're not trying to act like tough thugs. And I love those characters so much, and other people really like those characters. So when I had a chance, I wrote, I'd gotten an invitation to write something for an LGBTQ collection for Big Pulp. And so I wrote a story that was basically like an origin story for those two characters. And then I wrote a Christmas story for a different book, a different anthology that some people I knew were putting together. And they specifically asked me to write a story about those two characters. So I wrote a Christmas story about those two characters. And then I wrote, a little side story as a promo thing about the main character, about the detective. And then there's all this talk in the novel about the detective's grandfather, who is his role model and the reason that he's taking over. He becomes a detective because he's taking over his grandfather's business. And so I wrote a story about the grandfather. And then I wrote one that was kind of a more of a traditional hard-boiled pulp style story. And then I wrote one that was more of a humorous thing. It was another Christmas story that was with the grandfather as an old man in the 70s, and he's going out trying to find a Christmas present for his grandson. And all these little stories were just ways for me to kind of pop back in and revisit those things and keep them fresh in my mind. Sometimes it's easier to write those stories because you already know those characters, but a lot of time it's it's just more fun for me, and it feels more like mixing things up than if I'm trying to create a whole new world for each story. It's a nice little exercise to just kind of pop a story out. You already know the world, you already know the characters, you know, kind of half the work's already done.
Sure.
So you can focus on the mechanics of the story and not have to worry so much about characterization and everything else, because mm-hmm. it's already in there.
Sure.
And so it works really well if you have those kind of characters already in your stable, I guess.
Sure.
But the one thing I'll say about that is you have to make sure that those are characters that are worthy of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that their place in that bigger work isn't going to be diminished by what you're doing with them in the short stories.
Right. And I hate to...
lot of writers that I really love do that kind of thing, like Clive Barker and Stephen King and Elmore Leonard, you know, and even the pulp guys.
Right.
You go back to those pulp guys, and Hammett wrote... Dashiell Hammett wrote all these Continental Op stories, and then he wrote Red Harvest, which is probably the greatest crime novel ever written, and that was basically a Continental Op novel, but it was the same guy that had been in all these little short stories, and they don't really connect, but you know it's the same guy.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
We are, I hate to put the shorts on here, but Bobby, you need to ask the question, and you got about 3 minutes for a response.
Okay, here is the question. Do you ever have writer's block or not? And if you do, how do you get over it?
Oh, Lord. I've been suffering big time with it. It's more editing block, but I mean, it does happen. And what I find works best is to just change gears completely. So what I usually try to do, I finish a novel, I'll try and write a short story that's in a completely different genre, different style, different intent, just to kind of clear it out. And if I don't do that, I run into bigger problems where the themes and the emotion and stuff kind of carry over from one project into the next. And then I find that I'm kind of carrying over things too much. I'll catch that, and then that really kind of acts as a stumbling block, and then I stop, and I have to, you know, stew on it for a long time before I figure out what exactly the problem is and what's bothering me about it, and then I can go back and start over again. I tend to do that with everything. Like, I've got 4 or 5 books or stories that I get the idea for, and then they have to stew in the back of my mind for 6 years before I actually get around to it, but by then most of it's already formed.
Mm-hmm.
But the writer's block, once you're actually sitting down working on it, it happens more often with short stories for me than it does with novels, because the novel, I'll plan it out and I'll have everything laid out. Okay, this is what I need to do. Short stories is more of a kind of an emotional journey for me. I'm not trying so hard to stick to a plot. I'm trying to, you know, examine a shorter space, a shorter scene, but still get all the emotion and all the meaning into it. And then a lot of times it's the subtext. When I go back, I finish the story, and then I know there's something else that needs to be there. I know there's something else I need to add to it, and it's just taking me a while for my subconscious to get through the front of my brain and say, "Look, stupid, this is what you're missing."
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to have to, you know, I hate to do this to you, but we are out of time. It went so fast.
This has been great.
Yeah,
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a great conversation, and it's been fun having you. And
it's been fun being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. And the book is, of course, Con Morte. You can pick it up on Amazon. You can pick it up on your website too, can you? Coffinhop.com.
Yep. We actually were just finally set up with the store. We're having issues with it, but all of the books should be available on the website. You can purchase directly from us.
Okay, and then of course they are publisher.
Ebook and paperback.
There you go. So we've got, they are a publisher. They have other titles available. Go look at their website, coffinhop.com. And Axel Howerton, thank you so much for joining us on the Writer's Block this evening. And do come back.
Thank you. And, indeed, I will.
Thank
I know you guys do a lot of Western stuff, and we're planning another tall taller tales of the Weird West. So when we've got that going.
Bob and I are both Western writers.
It's a genre that is exploding.
It truly is. Truly is. And thank you again, Axel. And we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And it's Axel Howerton.
It is a genre. Stranger part of Westerns, you know?
Yes. Yes.
Comedy and horror.
Well, next week, Bobby Jean, thank you for your vote today.
You're welcome.
I had to send out emergency emails this morning because our writer that was scheduled for next week is having problems with her publisher, and her book is not even close to being ready yet. Something like J.R., Bobby Jean.
Yeah,
so,
I understand.
Yeah, so we kind of voted. We were going to have Henry on with us tonight, Henry Park. Well, we decided that next week we're going to have Henry on for the entire hour.
And we're looking forward to that.
And we're looking forward to having Henry in the studio with us. And Russ Avison will be joining us next week. So it'll be Bob and Russ and Henry and me and Bobby Jean on the phone.
Full house.
The entire Writer's Block crew will be front and present.
And Bobby Jean, you're going to be the most important card in the deck. We got four aces, but you're the queen.
That's right. We have a hat trick plus one.
Just the way I like it.
There you go. So we'll be talking to everybody next week. Thank you so much for joining us again this evening. It's been a hoot having you all listen. Bobby Jean, thank you for joining us from Albuquerque.
Of course.
And Bob, always a pleasure having you here with your show. No, I'm done now. I'm done busting you.
And for it's the myself, only time in my whole career I've missed a show.
I know, that's what you said. Your email was so plaintive. I'm so
done. I know. I felt so bad.
I did too. Anyway, that's okay, Bob. We suffered on without you.
I appreciate that.
But we did a credible job. Hey, Bobby Jean?
We did, but it would have been fun having them
talk
about.
It would have been great having you because you did want to talk
common.
To Ruth Ramsey.
Yes.
Okay, so for myself, Jim Christina, Bob Brill, Bobby Jean Bell in Albuquerque, this is the Writer's Block, and we are out of here.